Welcome to the Banking Reinvented podcast. Every week, we discuss how banks can progressively modernize their customer journeys and model business operations around their customers. You're listening to Tim Rutten, and I'll be joined by Backbase CEO and founder Jouk Pleiter and other senior banking leaders from around the globe. Ready to unpack how to re-architect banking together? Let's get started. Hey everyone, this is your host Tim Rutten, back with another fascinating panel from the Backbase Engage Americas conference. This time around, you'll join moderator Arun Ramamurthy as he speaks with the experts from BOK Financial, Everbank, and Fifth Third Bank about how they are navigating the complex commercial banking space. Tune in to hear how these digital leaders are responding to key challenges, capitalizing on recent trends, and unlock sustainable growth. Enjoy.
Good afternoon, everyone. So we are going to spend the next 45 minutes talking a little bit about commercial banking. We've spent quite a bit of time on lots of different topics, but for the next 45 minutes, it's going to be commercial banking. There are a few interesting trends that you will see in the market today. One is the amount of pressure that's on interest rates, which essentially is forcing commercial bankers to start looking elsewhere for revenue. And the other aspect of it, which is a completely on the different end of the spectrum, is innovation. So a recent research, 2 weeks ago, Datos published a research which said apparently 40% of innovation money is going to go into commercial treasury management, at least in the top 100 banks. So given that so much of money is going into that sector, we thought we will actually bring in some of our esteemed panelists to actually talk about commercial banking. So first, let's do a quick intro. Christine, tell us about you, your bank, a little bit, and then we'll go.
All right, and I want some of that 40%. Christine Martin, and I'm the head of treasury management at Everbank. Everbank is about a $40 billion bank. We're headquartered in Florida, Jacksonville, Florida. And we have traditionally been a digital platform, one of the leaders in digital banking, and are now reinventing ourselves with a branch forward and a commercial banking division in our bank to diversify. So that's where I come in, and that's where Backbase comes in.
Great. Jessica Wood. I head up commercial and payment products at Fifth Third Bank. I joined the bank January of 2023. I am not a banker by trade. I came from the payment startup space, so really looking to transform how we think about the commercial bank from a digital and payments perspective, focusing first on talent, then our tech stack, which is where Backbase comes in, and then really making sure that we've got the right data patterns in place to ensure that we're optimizing the customer experience. Fifth Third Bank is based in Cincinnati. We've got roughly about 24,000 employees. We operate in about 11 states today. We are emerging in Texas and California. So watch out. We're coming. And we are in the top 20 from a bank perspective within the U.S. With assets of $215 billion.
Shannon Lambert Habermill, and I'm the COO for BOK Financial. We're a $50 billion bank with $100 billion in assets under management within our wealth and trust division. Interesting about us, we're a pretty heavy fee income bank. So for us, we're like, bring it on. But we still want to make more money, so that's important. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I would say we're publicly traded but closely held, which is kind of an interesting story in of itself. We're pretty heavily community-minded bank, and we're a Middle Earth bank, so headquartered out of Tulsa, Oklahoma, and we're in eight states in the Southwest. So within, I'll just say within our world, my team's world, we manage the loan origination platform, CRM, commercial digital portal, which we have 30,000 users on the Backbase. I think that's right. Colin, you can correct me if I'm wrong. Ish. 40,000, that's right. Okay, just keep it going. So I'm excited to be here. And I'm curious how many people work in a commercial division or commercial banking space with not very many of you. So I think we can really say anything and they'll believe us. Right, okay. The people
these
in the
folks
front
right here, yes. They're all aggregated.
Thank you for all
right
of you.
Here.
You guys go get a glass of wine at any point in time. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for the intros. Jessica, I'm going to start with you. And I really want to start at like a macro level. Mm-hmm. So what are the trends that you're seeing in commercial banking at this point of time? What are the key things that bankers should be aware of and what should they be focused on?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. Really kind of three focus areas that I would start with is obviously the modernization of the legacy platforms, right? As we want to be able to compete with the fintechs and have more fungible tech stacks so that we can deliver product faster for our clients and really deliver a more curated experience based on the market segment, whether that's SMB, middle market, or large corporate, it really starts with the foundation. So I think in terms of you mentioned the 40% innovation. Up until, 6 months ago, our innovation for digital experience was basically zero within Fifth Third. And my team's done a really great job building out the story in how we really think about reimagining the commercial digital experience. And I think a lot of other banks are going to wake up to that and will continue to invest in that space. The second space is one that you've already talked about today. Yauch, presented his commitment, the lean into AI. That is really, kind of the second trend that I would say where there's a lot of talk. I think from a bank perspective, we're, dabbling in it. We're reading a couple books and doing some things in the back office. So I'm really excited to see what Backbase delivers because I think there's just a really great opportunity to expand from a partnership standpoint in the AI and automation space. The last one is really more payments oriented, and it's really embedded payments, right? How do you embed payments into your overall product offering? And really the two rails, for lack of a better word, that I would think about that drive growth is the instant payment rails, whether that's RTP or FedNow, and then also cross-border. I would say those are really the main areas. However, for those of you that are not based here in America, we've had some very interesting things come from the administration. So there's executive orders that have been put out that could kind of change some of those trends. One, the federal government is going to eliminate the use of all checks by September. And so that'll be interesting to see what that, how that really happens. And
somebody's
going
to have to tell my mother.
Yeah.
I don't think she got the memo.
I'm not telling her. So I think it's, a little unstable, right, in terms of, what we're going to have to face from a banking perspective. I think the other thing that's interesting is the Fed is changing their perspective on the oversight for crypto. So I think for banks that really want to lean in that emerging market, that's going to be a topic of discussion. I know it definitely is within the walls of Fifth Third today.
Nice. Thank you. Christine, anything from you? Shannon?
I already added my 2 cents.
I'm with Shannon.
Box checks.
So one thing that I'm going to pick from the trend is, Christine, it's more to start with you. Segmentation is one of the key challenges that you have when you look at the overall commercial banking segment itself. So how do you look at your market? How do you segment them? What are the challenges serving those different segments?
Yeah, good question. So, when I think about how banks normally segment, we normally segment by sales size. We have a small market, we have a medium mid-sized market, and we have a large corporate. And we put dollar amounts onto that, and that's the way we think about our customers. But really, that's just for our benefit. That's just makes it really super convenient for us to hire people into those spots. The way that we really need to think about segmentation is by how our customers are actually using our products. What are they doing with banking? It's because you could have a small business that is very innovative. In fact, I like to think about small business. So you have a $10 million business, and as bankers, we're like, that's just a $10 million business. But it's a really creative, hardworking, forward-thinking, typically, person who has a $10 million business. So that might be one of the hardest industries to please because they are so forward-thinking. They are demanding. They want to be serviced in a different way, a way that maybe we don't want to service them. So that's where the challenge becomes, is really starting to look at the market in terms of how they're using banking, how they're using treasury management, And we like to think treasury management, but they think of it as their money, as their cash flow. So what do they need from us? And looking at segmenting customers that way. That's one of the things I like to look at.
Anything?
Yeah, I think the one thing that I would add to that, and I agree, I think there's also this unique segmentation in terms of the old economy. So your manufacturing, yes, your brick and mortar to your new economy, right, which is your tech forward. And they have different needs. They have different, from a product capability standpoint, depending on size and the complexity of their organization. And even if you have a manufacturing company that's tech forward in the way that they deliver their products, the way that they operationalize their treasury management, their finance and accounting function is generally not sophisticated from a technology standpoint. So I think, you know, where Fifth Third wins is we have a really great product offering that really meets that old economy. Now what we've got to do in order to unlock the growth mode for Fifth Third Bank is how do we meet the needs of the new economy, the tech forward? And we did that, our first attempt at that is with our new line launch this year, or I guess it was last year when we launched our new line product offering, which is basically enabling APIs and subledgers and really starting to head down that path. So it's not only the size of the client, it's also kind of the old economy versus the new economy as well to be successful. Yeah. And I think you need a healthy balance of both.
Totally agree. And that's, you know, really one of the benefits that I have because I'm building this organization. And so I'm
so jealous.
Yeah. Oh, it's super fun.
You have no tech debt.
but I don't have the old legacy building blocks that we're working around. So it's really kind of different to think about, you know, how do we really want to move forward with this?
Something based on what you just mentioned, old economy versus the new one. A lot of the new ones are actually shying away from banks and going after fintech.
Yeah, that's very interesting because if you've seen, and you know, kind of part of the, you know, regulation changes that are happening when you look at like a Stripe or a PayPal, if they do get their bank charters here within, you know, the next 6 to 9 months, then their dependency on a bank is going to definitely change. And so I think that's another thing that we're going to see evolve over the next 12 months.
Would you see a lot of the fintechs as like complementary to what you're doing as much as competition?
I think we look at it two ways, right? Like, because you do have the fintechs that you are competing against for sure. But they also make us think harder and they make us work harder. They make us think differently. But then we are definitely dependent on fintechs. And there used to be a day when banks built everything themselves, right? A long time ago. And back in the dark ages. But I think what's interesting now is it's the bank that really thinks about where they're going to pull their partners, their fintech partners in, how they're going to utilize those partners. Because as bankers, we're loaded down with like balance sheet management, regulations, you know, all the garbage that we have to deal with every day, and you don't. And so the fintechs come to us with these really neat things. And they know that if we want them, we will work through our obstacles to put them in place. In fact, I wrote down because I thought, first of all, the keynote this morning did such a great job at setting us up. I mean, Yauch, I mean, we probably gave him notes or something because he talked about growth mode and how we use fintechs to leapfrog, to grow. And that's absolutely the key. That's 100% where I believe.
And anything from your side?
No, I'll just say I agree. It's, you know, much like you all, you're not trying to create everything yourselves, right? It's constantly partners and just showing all the logos behind. I think banks sometimes, again, just feel like we have to solve everything ourselves, but we don't. We can't. We don't have enough money. And in some fintechs, we just need to just accept exist, and it's fine. Like, we weren't really getting that market share anyways. Maybe somebody was just manually reconciling their account, right? And then others are our competition, and others we just need to bring in as vendors of our own or parties that we work with to help our clients get what they need. I mean, we're here to be a resource for them, and it doesn't always have to be just for our products and solutions, right? I mean, we're here as relationship banks, and that's, I think, important for us all to remember.
Nice. Just continuing with you, one of the things that BOK Financial has done is like you've worked on really improving the commercial onboarding experience. Help us with some of what you've done and how it's improving the experience for the commercial end customer. Because the way that I've seen it is there's a lot of focus on improving the experience of the retail user and even to some extent small business users. When you look at the commercial, there was one statistic that came out in a research report where they said a commercial client onboarding can take anywhere between 30 days to 4 months. Mm-hmm. How do we shorten that? I mean, what are you doing to kind of reduce that?
Yeah, and I think there's two main components, because if you say onboarding, I bet you anyone in this room would give you one of two main answers, which would be the client experience. But there's also within our banks or financial institutions, our own experience, right? So, you know, one of the things we've done just within the commercial division is just for new accounts. Like, this is where banks really struggle. So our fabulous, fearless leader, Michelle Miller, who runs our treasury client services team, really pulled all the account opening activities off of what was 5 different groups and then created a centralized group. Yes, we need to go digital. So my team here on the IT side is like, you fools. So we'll get there. But like just to pull that so that people can be seamless in execution of new accounts, because it's 30 days that we hear of. I mean, some of our clients are really, per their loan agreements, required to open accounts at other banks, but they're like, we're just not, like, you know, we're talking about the police out here to catch us if we happen to have a glass of wine or something on stage. But like, you know, there's not always somebody monitoring. Not always somebody monitoring that. So we found like just that account opening experience, if we can streamline that, makes all the impact in the world. So what we're really focused on right now is the back office side of the efficiency, mapping everything out, trying to figure out where we can make things easier, and then having that translate then to the client experience. I mean, some of it's already reaping benefits, and we're really focused on it on the commercial side, but we are also an enterprise group on our team. And so working with our wealth partners to do the same.
Jessica, anything you're doing?
Yeah, so I think the reality is, I mean, we'd all love to get down into the retail experience where you can be under rent in minutes and have access to the product capabilities. I just don't think that's really, you know, reality once you get to a certain segment of the market, just because of the complexity of the loan covenants and what you're underwriting and the financial statements and then the ongoing monitoring of that relationship, right, and the money movement associated with that relationship. So I think, you know, what Shannon's been doing in terms of streamlining, you've got to start with streamlining the processes, right? From that standpoint, and then you enable with technology from an automation standpoint. We'd all like to get down to hours, but I think it's a worthy goal to get down to days in terms of being able to stand up commercial clients. And when I talk about standing them up, I mean, it's really their core four. It's their lending component. It's their account management, their digital experience, all of the payment types that they need, the information reporting, reconciliation, the fraud prevention, right? When you think about positive pay for ACH or check, I think, you know, to get that done in a couple days would be a very different experience for the client, because we do want to get, you know, it's time to value, right? Value for the customer, leveraging our services and products, and then also, you know, value for the bank as well.
Thanks.
Yeah, I mean, this is a very important topic because, you know, it's a revenue solution, right? The sooner you get a customer on board, the sooner you start turning revenue. And also, they can also opt away if you're taking too much time or it's too hard for them. And we're at the beginning of this journey. We're in a very manual place right now with a lot of swivel chairing going on. And so looking at it from the perspective of how do we digitize the entire experience, mm-hmm. all the way from the time that, you know, we start talking to them and start onboarding them, you know, like Jessica said, through the treasury experience, but then also eventually they're going to go away. I mean, most customers don't stay forever. And so how do we elegantly offboard them in a way that allows them to continue to have access to some of their information if that's what we decide to do? And also in a way that doesn't cost us a lot of money. It shouldn't be a super huge burden to offboard a customer. So it's the whole solution. And, you know, it's kind of fun to be at the very beginning of it, looking at how are we going to do this well? Again, without a lot of the legacy platforms in place, good and bad, but we're getting moving on it.
Something that you just mentioned, seamless experience. How will you define a seamless experience for a user? And not just on the onboarding, on a day-to-day basis, what is your take on what is the seamless experience that a commercial customer should be having?
So I look at commercial customers as a group of consumers. And that group of consumers is doing work in a company. And that group of consumers has some really cool apps on their phones that they use in their consumer daily life. And so it's getting as close to that as possible. We can't get all the way there. We have fraud controls. We have other things that we have to put users and other things that we have to put in place for commercials, customers. But it's getting as close to the consumer experience as possible. So can we put our toes against that consumer experience while keeping ourselves safe?
Yeah, go ahead.
I just want to chime in. I think I have a little bit different perspective on, you know, what seamless is for the commercial bank client. And really, the way that I define it is it's easy to interact. We're easy to interact with. It's easy to use our products. Mm-hmm. You have a digital experience that allows you to self-service. You don't have to pick up the phone and call somebody for menial tasks. Every time you pick up the phone to talk to someone, whether that's an RM or a TMO or the CSC within the operations, it's for something that's meaningful. So I think getting a lot of the waste out of the, you know, the customer journey and experience is really a great step forward towards a seamless experience. But they're large clients. They're complex. They're not going to be easy, and it's never going to be seamless. So I think you can optimize, you know, the journey, you know, 80% of the way, but you're going to always have kind of that white glove component, just because that's who we are in the ecosystem. We are a relationship bank, so we care about those human interactions.
Yep.
Talking about that experience, right? So something that you mentioned was essentially payments. And how payments have become front and center when it comes to commercial banking. So talk a little bit about payment modernization. What exactly are the things that are happening, and what is Fifth Third doing in that front?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first, we finally have a budget, an innovation budget. And we have a great team in place, both on the product and engineering side. But really what we're doing to really modernize not only digital, but also our digital experience for our commercial bank clients, which expands beyond just payments. It's lending, it's your accounts payable, receivable, capital markets, wealth and asset management. We'll also be coming into that. But effectively, really just rethinking what that experience needs to be for our clients, depending on the segment, you know, size, and then also old versus new economy. But also what we're doing is we are modernizing our back-end payment rails. I am convinced that we have the right team in place, that we will actually execute on payment modernization in a very elegant manner, again, with another strategic partnership, which then will create scalability and resiliency for us to continue to grow. Payments is we have the we're blessed with a non-traditional CEO that comes from payments consultant background. So payments is front and center. We actually no longer have treasury management within the commercial bank. We are now rebranded as commercial payments. We are reporting to the street our commercial payments fee income, and so there's a very different lens that the third is putting on commercial payments. Externally and also internally, definitely getting more investment. But when we think about the growth rate, our peers are probably growing between 5-6% on an annual basis in payments, and we're growing at 8%, and we're just getting started. So we will continue to focus and invest in this area because we believe there's a lot of market share that we can go gobble up.
Nice.
I think there's a lot of, so I totally agree with everything that you said on payments. You know, we used to think about receivables as the way that you fund your balance sheet, but it's really turned over time to payments, because payments is where the bank needs to excel in order to attract the customer. So, you know, we're all looking at how can we be that payment provider that absolutely meets our customers' needs, all unique, you know, like Jessica's saying, all unique needs, but how can we do that through a seamless platform?
Given that checks are going away,
And I own Lockbox, so that's going to be fun.
September?
Yeah. Let's talk about instant payments a little bit. Instant payments, again, right now, RTP, they are processing like billions of dollars in a given day. FedNow is lagging behind. And the adoption of FedNow is much slower than what even the Fed anticipated. That's on the one side. The other side, like just a couple of days ago, Truist announced a bill pay-like solution, so which means that it's an anonymized RTP payment where you don't need to provide your account number or any of that information. So there is also innovation that's happening on the instant payment front. So how do you see that? How do you reconcile that? On the one hand, adoption is low. The other hand, there's also innovation happening. So what?
Yeah, instant payments is really interesting. So the clearinghouse is a little bit of a jump start. They've been in market for 7 years, right? The Fed launched last year, so they're coming. Well, no, 2 years ago. They'll be coming up on their 2-year anniversary in July. And so the clearinghouse had a little bit more of a head start. Plus, they're owned by 20 member banks that are required on the investment that they put into it to enable it. So that gives them a little bit of a head start. I think that will change over time because what you've seen, what the Fed has done has been really unique in that they're not limiting the use cases that are allowed on the rails. For instance, the Kentucky Derby is this weekend. So any of you guys that are looking to dial up that gambling app, the Fed will allow you to fund your digital wallet for gaming type activities where the clearinghouse will not. And so I think once you get a little bit more market adoption, right, this takes us back to when credit cards, when B of A launched credit cards, years ago, you've got to have the network adoption. You've got to have the banks that are sending it. You have to have the banks that are receiving it. And I think the Fed will get there in the next probably 12 months. And I think what you're going to see out of that is some very unique use cases that'll come out. So I think there's still innovation. There's just not the volume to justify the innovation just yet. So it's kind of a little bit, cart before the horse. I'm really excited for Truist, and I think what they're doing there on the RTP side is really interesting. We certainly it's game on, right, in terms of what the next thing that we develop from an instant payments perspective. But to answer your other question, just kind of around checks, when we think about checks, you've got the B2B and you've got the B2C. On B2B, I think we have a great opportunity to convert all of that check to an instant payment through a request for payment capability. The challenge with that, again, comes down to the adoption, because not only do you have to have it enabled, it being a request for payment on the instant payment rail, you have to have it enabled on your commercial rail, but then you also have to have it enabled on consumer. So then you get into this prioritization war of, well, commercial has it, we're waiting for consumer to enable it. So once that blocker gets removed, I think we'll see a little bit more movement there. But there's it's going to take a little bit more time for us to get some really great traction on instant payments.
So not September?
Not September. It's not happening by September.
One of the things that when we talk to bankers, one of the things that comes up often when we have the conversation about instant payments is the fear of cannibalization of some of the revenue that they might have on wires or ACH. Okay. How do you see that? How do you see any one of you?
Well, I think we survived when ACH came around, right? Because
exactly.
There were tons of wires, and we all remember a time when clients finally shifted. It's just different, right? Like, everything changes, right? I mean, we've lost, payments volume to cards, to the card rail. I mean, there's just, it'll all be fine. Is that what you want to hear, Arun? It's going to be okay.
Yeah.
Well, and I think also it's the innovation that happens around RTP, right? So banks are not just going to lose the revenue and be okay with it. We're going to innovate around it. You're going to innovate around it. That will come. But I'd be lying if I didn't say it was a little scary to think about, losing that nice wire income that comes pretty easy.
Yeah, that is true.
I think NACHA did a really great job in combating instant payments with same day ACH. In addition to that, they've increased their limit up to 10 million, where RTP, I think, is a million and the Fed is 500,000.
2 million on the RTP, 500,000 on the
Fed. So ACH kind of still has it locked up a little bit in terms of the limit, because that's really what it's going to come down to. I don't see, you know, when I very first kind of got into this game a couple years ago, that was a big concern. That was one of the first things that everyone kept asking me, like, what do you think? Are we going to lose revenue if we launch these things? I'm like, I have no idea. Let's see how things play out. And really, it's we're finding that because of the limits in wire and the niche, you know, service that it provides, I don't think you're going to see any cannibalization with wire. However, when our wire platform goes down, we push everything through our RFP so that we can, or through RTP, so that we can actually move funds. So the instant payments rail provides, and I don't think anybody really thought about this, but it does create some redundancy and scalability for some of the other networks, because you have these complicated networks with clearinghouses, and when those things go down, this is why payment orchestration, smart routing is so important from a modernization standpoint, because then you have the option to flip the rail, so you can still, at the end of the day, deliver on the promise to move money for your clients.
Can we spend a few minutes on cross-border payments? Because all three of your banks offer cross-border payments. That's not something commonly offered by all banks, at least not in the U.S. It's pretty common outside of the U.S. So can we talk a little bit about cross-border payments and what's the opportunity in terms of cross-border payments, especially with FX and how you see it?
Do you want me to go? Okay. So cross-border payments is complicated and it's expensive. That's why you're going to see your top 10 banks, they can afford to do it. We haven't quite figured it out just yet with Fifth Third. It wasn't part of our strategic plan for 2025 because we knew we had to modernize the existing platforms that we were operating on before we brought on another rail. That being said, there's huge growth opportunity with cross-border. It will continue to grow. I think on average, it's growing anywhere from 15 to 25% from that standpoint. So this is really a great place when you think about buy versus build or partner. This is a great area where we would partner with a fintech that has all of those integrations to all of those different, rails, so we could provide that seamless experience for our customer, or potentially use a BNY Mellon for their, international clearing capabilities as well. I think it's hard, it's complex, and it's expensive. It's low volume.
Yeah,
right?
We're very
for us low, right now.
Yeah, we're very low volume, and we have the luxury of having another department, another division in the bank that has higher volume that drives really the back office operation, and we kind of tag on. But it is an area that we're looking at to say, you know what, we can do more here. We can definitely use this to our advantage. For the size of bank we are very fortunate to have this operation in place.
Anything from you, Sean?
I'll say the ACH component has ebbed and flowed through the years, right? But the wire volume has still been strong. I mean, I'll be curious, and now that we're talking about this, I need to go back and check and see how things are changing. And just that would be an interesting indicator to watch as far as volumes for our corporate clients and what business they are doing overseas right now. But it is. It's complicated. It's low volume. And we have also centralized all lines of business into one line of business that manages all international activity, just to make sure we're doing it as efficiently as possible. And it's confusing and lots of deadlines and
regulation, compliance, everything,
disputes, all of the things.
I'm going to move on to a slightly different topic, and Shannon, I'm coming to you on this one. BOK Financial has been interesting in terms of how you've been doing technology. You have a pretty good in-house technology team, plus you've been picking up different providers for best-of-breed solution. How do you see all of these things kind of coming together as an ecosystem for your bank?
And I could tell you where we are. Our CFO is probably not like super happy right now, but we've kind of gone through, I'll call it the big four investments. So, you know, the first, people from my team are like, oh, I wonder what she's going to say. You may have a different list. So, you know, we had our commercial digital portal, which is built on the foundation of Backbase. And so we rolled that out internally. We have built that with our fabulous team. And we have three of our, from our IT team here that have built that. And that, not it's enterprise for non-consumer, and so that lift has been huge, and where we go from there is not just integrations and single sign-ons but driving efficiencies, and that's really where we get our money's worth out of it, in my humble opinion. We had our wealth platform modernization, so again, picking another vendor that could take it to the next level for us. You know, our assets under management are double the size of the assets of the bank for our wealth team, so that was huge, and that was last summer, and we actually rolled those clients into our commercial digital portal where applicable. And then the last of three legs of our commercial lending platform went live, and I guess it ended in April. So this month was like the end of that huge best in breed. You know, we had in-house systems, we had too many different vendors, and we needed a true workflow. And then payments is the last leg of where we'll be able to take more advantage of RTP and other things. So, you know, we get all these as we're all experiencing. I'm sure everybody's got the same story. We've gone through these huge, big, like best in breeds, behemoths that we take on. And then you got like some crappy vendor for remote deposit. And you're like, what am I going to do to get that doesn't even have an API? Yeah. Like, how many systems don't have APIs? And the product managers that have them are like, over here. And so then we have these great, like, nimble, new, you know, like services and products. And then we've got to figure out, what do we do with what we have? And it's low volume stuff, and it's, nobody wants to go and say, we're going to find it's not sexy to find a new bill pay provider for your bank. Like, nobody wants to, if you got four things you can get done, that's not going to be one of them, but that's where you spend all your time, like servicing, maintaining. So I think it's been really interesting to do such really cool things that we're all doing right now. And then you got to like pair it up with some old system that doesn't even have an API, and you're like, how do I make this work? And so a lot of duct tape and Southern engineering, and then hopefully checks go away in September and everybody except my mother is going to be excited. And so I think that simply by the change in the way payments are managed, I think will also make a difference in us continuing to find the best in breeds and minimizing our vendors, and then just really finding that simplicity, because I know that's something else, and I'll just jump ahead, that you asked me to mention is trying to help to simplify the complexity. I would say things are too simple, right? Like, we have all these products that just have like a data file at the end of the day, and they're so basic in how they operate. And what we really need is just more dynamic systems that are more nimble and honestly a little more complicated, so that things work better together and that the client experience in the end isn't, you know, oh, if I want to see my receivables, I go to like five different systems, even if it's under, you know, our commercial digital portal, like they want to see it in one place. Right. And so I would say we need to make things more complicated to get, not from a client experience standpoint, but from how we operate.
Good. Jessica, anything, because you're going through both the back office and front office on the payment side.
Yes. We just decided to jump in with both feet. No, I mean, I think, you know, as we started this journey, it really started with, what is the story? What are the outcomes that we're trying to drive here for the commercial bank? As we think about really, and this is more our goal of, you know, our path to our first billion in commercial payment fees, which we plan on doing in the next couple years. So making sure we've got the right partners, and we picked two. Backbase is definitely, you know, our partner that we're really excited to go on this journey with. And what I would say is just make sure that you're doing your due diligence at the right levels when it comes to your partners. You know, we took a little bit of a unique approach, and, you know, the working team had issued an RFP, to kind of scan the market and get an understanding of, you know, who the partners were out there, what their capabilities, what's their performance, can they handle our scale, we're growing, can they grow with us? But I think it really starts with, you know, the C-suite and understanding, you know, what is the ethos of the company? What is the culture? Are they really here to help us unlock growth and change? And I've been very, very pleased with Yauch's leadership, his leadership team, everybody that we've came in contact with at Backbase, because you're really helping us pioneer something that that Fifth Third Bank has never done, and quite frankly, probably wouldn't have the guts to do without my leadership team, both on the product and engineering side and in the partnership we have with Backbase. So I think that's how we get to best of breed.
Yeah. Christine, any thoughts?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because we're also building the back end at the same time that we're building the front end, and trying to put those two together has been, you know, it's a challenging project. It's a lot, right? But at the end of the day, we will have that modernization on both sides. Now that said, I think, you know, like you guys said, the key is finding the right partners, because it takes a big appetite to integrate with another solution that isn't up and running, you know, in the infrastructure. So, and sometimes you have to do it 2 and 3 times, because since it's not active, you know, there might be some fits and starts and redoing things. And so it does take like a really bold partner, to jump in with you. So, as you well know, Arun, you know, we're in this together, and, you know, it's going to be, at the end of the day, we're going to get there. But you know, we're doing some really great things.
Nice. So, any final thoughts? I'm going to start with you, Christine, so that, and then we'll go around.
Sure.
So final thoughts on what you're doing in general about commercial banking, anything?
So, you know, I'm leaving today really with a bigger part of my brain is dedicated to AI than when I walked in. And, you know, I've never really, honestly, it's scary. It's one of these things that, you know, the compliance people don't like to talk about. And so it's like, I haven't had the brain space to deal with it yet. But it's here, and if we don't embrace it, we're going to be left behind. And so, you know, that's really where that's kind of been a big change for me just in this one day.
Jessica?
Yeah, I think, you know, the way that I'm kind of closing out this conversation, it really comes down to just leaning into the hard things, leaning into the unknown, leaning into the complexity, and just enjoying the journey and making sure you've got the right partners, both internally and externally, by your side. I think this morning was, I mean, I got goosebumps. I was really excited on what Backbase is doing from an AI perspective, because quite frankly, we will never get there as a bank. And we need the strategic thought leadership from our strategic partners to do that. So we're in with you guys. I'm glad you're all in commercial banking. Heard that today. And all in AI. And we're in it with you.
Shannon?
So I'll take a different twist. As we're going through all these big projects that you all are going through, our team last week, we're leaning in on, and Kira went through this too, so thank you for your patience, Kira, with me. But just getting change management certified, right? So we had ProSci change management certification, and we're able to, within our team, we've got people within our FI that do that training. And we got to the end of the 3 days, and I was talking to Kevin, who does all the training, and he's like, Shannon, you got to change some job descriptions. And he said, if you think you're going to go through all of these changes, all of these vendors, all of this stuff, and you're going to do it with the same people and the same job descriptions, you're wrong. And it really, it's like still, my mind is still reeling about, oh my gosh, that is where we all hit these walls, right? Like you're talking to somebody who just doesn't get it. So it takes some time, and it takes upskilling, and then sometimes it takes just changing people out, right? Rotating your team to make sure you've got the right people in the right seats, because it doesn't matter if you bring in Backbase or nCino or Salesforce or whoever it is you bring in, if you don't have the right people designing and engineering it. And you can't just expect your IT people to know how you want it built. They all know how they want it built. Like, they're here to partner with us. Like, we have to pony up and have the right staff as well. So I'm contemplating that.
Amen.
Thank you so much for all three of you. We do have 2 more minutes. Any questions from the audience?
Is this when we get the wine? You promised us wine.
Where's the wine? I like Rosé.
Mark, time for wine.
So we do have a question in the back over there.
Yes, please.
I don't have wine. I have wine.
Sorry.
Ashley, for being awesome panel. Just a question.
new regulations, the Genius Act, stable coins, worried about payments disintermediation at all?
Yes and yes. Yeah, my biggest concern around that is, you know, obviously everyone's like, oh, it's open season. And, you know, if there's, you know, our bankers want something new and fun to sell. And so, yes, we can sell crypto. No, we can't sell crypto. We don't even have the right oversight scaffolding put around this product before we can actually enter into it. And then I think you've got to kind of figure out, at least the way we're thinking about it, is how do we step into it? What is our product offering, you know, on day 0, 1, 2, 3, and 4, and then making sure we've got all of the regulatory oversight, because we know there will be an administration change in 4 years, and we can't build products and build our regulatory compliance policies to who's in office. We have to do that for what's the right thing for the ecosystem. And we learned that in 2023, right, when there was SVB collapse, all of those things. We have a fiduciary responsibility in this ecosystem to save everybody from themselves. And so I'm very concerned about that. We will do it in, you know, Fifth Third Bank. We will get into this market at some point, and we will do it in a safe manner that protects our clients and consumers.
All right, I guess we are almost out of time. Once again, thank you so much for the three of you to spend the time and come up on stage and talk to us on commercial banking. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to Banking Reinvented, a podcast by Backbase. Make sure to follow both Jauke and myself on LinkedIn, where we will be sharing key insights about our journey towards modernizing banking.